Okay. So I think when you guys had left, have we told you about just going on Tafelberg?
Okay.
Yeah, just working on Tafelberg first. We were expecting a financial model to be published by the province in November. And it was, so basically the financial model was to see whether affordable housing, social housing would be possible on the Tafelberg site. You've seen the and how it could be cross-subsidized, and whether there were grants, like state grants available to construct it and to maintain it, etc., etc. And they did, in mid-November, they published the feasibility study or the financial model. And then after that, we started getting, putting together like a task team or so, or a reference group model thing of like experts who could kind of help us put together a response to this financial model. So like in that, like social housing institution managers, like type, like experts basically, like Malcolm McCarthy, who's with National, like architects, planners, like it was a was quite a big group that we put together. And then they kind of pointed out, so they basically helped us by assess the model. So the province had suggested that, had proposed that 270 units could be built on the site. And that basically if they go this route, that they would lose the 135 million that they would have gained from the sale of the site. And they said that the maintenance of the social housing units could be cross-subsidized by building like retail space and selling it. And then they said that they would sell the heritage sites for, and they called it a community facility, so to bring in money there. And then it wasn't a very imaginative proposal, so let me try and see if I can draw it out. So this is the school site. This is like, you know, the tennis courts and swimming pools. So it's like an L shape. So this side to this side, it would be the social housing units. This side would be the retail space. So they'd sell this, they'd sell this, and they'd construct these. And then they proposed in the model that, okay, so social housing funds come from the national government, right? Through, from the Human Settlements Department. They give money to like a company called the SHRA. What is it called? SHRA? Social Housing Regulatory Authority. And the social, so SHRA gives money to social housing institutions for the construction of a social housing project. So now the money is at a set, so it comes, okay, so the, and the, that fund, the fund that they give is called the the restructuring capital grant. And it, I think currently it's like at 135,000 rand. I mean, I could be wrong here. I just need to confirm how much. Like it's a very small
minimal,
sum. Yeah, sum per unit. Right. And then there's another subsidy that comes from the province called I think it's called the institutional subsidy or something like that. So the, these two grants for the construction, and it's also quite minimal. So I think a unit using these two sums together is less than 300,000 rand to construct, which is not a lot of money. But then there's been talks for a long time now about increasing the grants, as well as increasing the band of people that qualify for social housing. So right now it's like if you earn between 1,500 and 7,500, you can get access to social housing. But usually social housing institutions like to go for, and 1,500 to 3,500 is the lower band. 3,500 to 7,500 is the upper. And they love playing with this 3,500 to 7,500. And like you find that there aren't a lot of people that earn 1.5 that get access. So anyway, the proposal now, or the conversation has been to increase it from, to push up the 7,500 to 15,000 to target the gap market, which is a good thing. So also, it's better for cross-subsidization and all of that. Anyway, so then in the province's proposal, they'd worked on the assumption that the grants had been increased, which was, it was weird. It was just weird. Like, we didn't know whether or not to be apprehensive or to take it as a good thing, because maybe it's an indication that it's actually going to happen. Or, So these things go together, the grants and the bans. But they didn't increase the bans. So they increased the grants, but they didn't increase the bans, okay. Which is weird. Anyhow, so then we respond to say, well, you know, fantastic, well done. But this is how we imagine, like, you could do so much more on this. Let me get you our submission just to show you what
thank you. Is.
It's actually really interesting to read through this because this document. So this was our submission to
okay.
put together. We're just trying to see what people can use. So this was their model. So the retail, so sold, and these are the units.
Yes.
And this also kind of just basically decimates their proposal because it was like, they were like calculation errors, bro. Like 1 + 1 did not equal 2 for them. Like it was like so many errors. And then our proposal. So we created 2 scenarios.
Yeah.
One is that you could have 297 rather than 270.
Okay.
We gave the total cost of construction. And then we said as well the most important component, so we talked about how you can cross subsidize, and that would basically be creating market residential
okay.
that you can either a portion of which you can sell and a portion of which you can rent out, which kind of keeps money coming in all the time. And most importantly is that you would get, they would get a 75,000 rand payment rather than this zero, because we knew that when they start saying zero, it's like, wow, we're not going to benefit from this because we really need this money. So then we gave a second one.
Is it very good?
Yeah, thank you. Like Julian's girlfriend partner actually did this, right? These designs, they're so cool. I love all these sketches. And then we took it a little bit further with 316 social housing units, 121 market rate, and that kind of same thinking, like you can cross-subsidize by doing here, or you can increase the bulk. I think that was one of the most important things, is like you're underplaying what you can do on this site. And equally, you can get like a 76 million rand cash payment if you kind of go in this direction. Anyway, do all this work, it was so beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
So the first section just basically gives you the background, like city planning in Cape Town generally, the background of that site. The second part goes through the province's feasibility study and what was problematic with it. And the third part is like, this is what you could do.
The vision for
it. Yeah. Anyway, so it was due, so at the beginning of this year, they asked if the purchaser asked if they could extend, you guys have a nerve. They asked if they could, so it was due on, submissions were due on the 31st of January.
Okay.
And then the purchaser, like on the 20th, asked if they could get an extension so that they can still work on their model or whatever. To the 15th of February. Anyway, the province obviously allowed it, and that's when it was due. And then in mid-March, they basically came out with a response that actually they're going to go ahead with the sale. And you know that these things are never quiet, right? Like, I'm saying it very quickly, glossing over it. But, like there was a lot of hype and drama and all of that in the middle of it all. And Bromwell is still happening as well during this period.
Okay.
But I'll come tell you about it.
Looking back to Bromwell.
We'll come back to Bromwell. So, I think it was the 22nd of March or something. They basically say, no, we're going to go ahead and sell the site. For the following reasons. Firstly, also they start off by saying, when we're gonna sell this site, but we are going to earmark the Helen Bowden Nurses Home for affordable housing. That's the house that we've occupied now.
Okay.
In Cage. and also Woodstock Hospital site for affordable housing. That's the site we've also occupied, so those two sites.
Okay.
And then, so that's kind of like the thing, this plaster over the wound. And then they're like, so the reasons that we decided to go ahead with the sale is, firstly, Sea Point does not fall within a restructuring zone. Like, a restructuring zone is what, like, an area needs to fall within to qualify for subsidies, right? So that's one side. So they're like, it falls outside. And, oh, my favorite, in the letter that they wrote to Mandisa, they're like, we were made aware by the purchaser that this site falls outside the restructuring zone. They don't mention anything else about any of the submissions other than the purchaser pointed out that the site falls outside of the restructuring zone, but fine. The second thing they say is that we need the funds for the sale of the site to build offices for the education department, which is something that they've been hiding forever. Like, for the last year, they've been saying that it's for pro services, which is like basically... Only after like a lengthy investigation did we find out where that money was going to go to. So obviously now they put it out there. And then there was a third one. I'm trying to remember now. I'm trying to recall. Oh yes, National Treasury has given us a directive that we need to use our assets to kind of basically like, yeah, use our assets for whatever kind of priorities we deem to be necessary, like, kind of thing. And we decided to sell the site to fund this office, etc., etc. So we have a National Treasury directive. We need to build this office block, and it falls outside of restructuring. So immediately after we got this, we wrote to the Department of Humans, the National Department of Human Settlements, to ask about this restructuring zone, because for the longest time we thought about so the restructuring zones are like, there's like a Milnerton restructuring zone kind of thing. So there's a social housing project in Brooklyn, which is within the Milnerton suburb.
Okay.
And then there's another restructuring zone known as CBD and surrounds.
Okay.
So automatically when you think of CBD here and mm-hmm. surrounds, I mean, Sea Point is like, right, that's a surround.
Yeah.
Like, it's right there. It's like less than 5Ks. And everybody, like people in the city, people in the province, have always alluded to CBD and surrounds, including Tafelberg, but it's never been written down anywhere. So we wrote to the Department of Human Settlements, National, and they basically responded. So our thing was like, first we'd like to verify whether or not Sea Point falls outside the restructured zone of the CBD and surrounds, and if so, if you would agree to a rezoning of sorts,
mm-hmm.
like if you could place it within the CBD and surrounds. So to do that, basically the city would need to apply, the province would need to support it, and it needs to be gazetted by the national department. City wrote a letter saying that if you want Tafelberg to fall within a restriction zone, we would fully support it. The National Department wrote back and said, oh, we also assume that Tafelberg fell within the CBD and surround, but if it doesn't, then of course we'll support it. So now who's the villain? It's the province. So you are your own stumbling block in all
mm-hmm.
of this. So that was one of the responses that we gave. And then we wrote to National Treasury to say, the response that we got from the province was that you gave them a directive that they could use their funds to do projects like the Dope Street project. How does that balance out with like social issues? I mean, you talk about densifying, because they talk about it a lot in
mm-hmm.
Treasury. You have an entire program dedicated to kind of upscaling cities and making
mm-hmm.
them more accessible. So like, this directive contradicts completely what we know your programs to be. But like, we said no such thing. That was not a directive that we gave. We said this, like, we don't understand where that would come from. So basically every argument that they proposed was basically slated. So it's just been this back and forth in the media about how, and they're the only ones standing for
yes,
themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a city that says, the municipality that's like, that site should have been reserved for social housing. The Human Settlements National Department that says it should have been. National Treasury is a big deal. Like, it's a huge deal. It's seen as one of the more impartial, like, national
mm-hmm.
institutions. I mean, with the National Department of Human Settlements, you can bring in party politics and then it just negates the argument. But with National Treasury, even you really can't.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, but you know Helen Zille, like, stuck to guns, this is the right decision. Anyway, so right now we're at a stage where we are, I think the agreement with the province last year was that if they decide to proceed, we'll go back to court and then we'll open up the lease, we'll open up the case to find out why they sold it in the first place, considering like service delivery objectives, you know. So that's where we are right now, and we're campaigning around that. Back to Bromwell. So on the 31st of January was supposed to be the submission of the on the feasibility study. On the 30th of January was the Bromwell court case.
This is true.
Oh my gosh, the most racist judge on the face of the planet was in that hearing.
Serious?
Oh, we've asked for his recusal. So the recusal hearing is going to be on the 18th and the 19th of this month.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, so we went to court on the 30th, and what happened? Like, it's just, he just said the weirdest, most demeaning things. Like, he wouldn't listen to reason at all. So the city argued that they don't have any parcels of land or derelict buildings within the Woodstock area to like refurbish and to use to house the Bromwell residents, and that they don't have a choice but to send them to Volvarafia. I don't know if we ever gave you a crash course on Volvarafia. Okay, so when evictions take place and people are rendered homeless because of them, the law says that they have to be provided temporary alternative accommodation.
Okay.
Right? The state has that responsibility. What they have done, and for a decade or so, is create these temporary relocation areas, but they are far. Far away. Blikkiesdorp is one of them.
Oh, right? Yes.
You've heard of Blikkies.
Yes.
So that's one of them. So away from like social services, far from jobs, like it's just a shit show. And then they've developed another one, but they don't call it a TRA. They call it an IDA, which is an incremental development area, which means it's permanent, and that they'll slowly, like, they'll incrementally develop it over time and blah, blah, blah. But it looks exactly like Blikkiesdorp, except it's, like, further in the middle of nowhere. And I'll send you a video, like, we took drone footage of, like, what it looks like. It's just barren. We did a social audit there in 2015. Like, the streetlights weren't working. There was no hospital anywhere nearby. People had to walk from, like, the main road, which is a highway. It's not, like, a main road where you catch a taxi. Like, a highway, which is probably, like, 8 kilometers away. There's no police station nearby. There are no schools nearby. Like, no services. It's just, it's the most horrible thing that could happen to anybody. And Chanel works in Woodstock.
Yes.
Chanel works in Woodstock at night.
Yes.
So like, yeah, so we're, and she's just one example. She's like,
yes.
I don't understand, how am I meant to get
to work?
The judge says, so just an example of the things he said, he's like, so obviously one of the one of the points raised is like, people can't get to jobs or people can't get to transport reasons. And he said something along the lines of, what are unemployed people, why do unemployed people need to get to, either to taxis or to like transport services or like just basically when you, yes, I think it was to transport, it's like, when do you need to go when you're unemployed? Like just the most, it was unbelievable the stuff that he was saying. But the city is like, well, there's nowhere where we can provide alternative. This is it. It's this or nothing. Like, there's nothing else we can give you. So our argument was obviously that, well, make a plan. Be creative.
Mm-hmm.
If this is your only option, go back to the drawing board,
mm-hmm.
let the residents stay, and until there's another option, they must stay there.
Yeah.
And that's where the debate is right now, or the case is right now.
Okay.
But it's also interspersed with the recusal of this judge, because he said some really, like, I'll try and find you, like, some sources to draw from, like, some materials about the stuff that he said. So Chanel and them have been at the house,
mm-hmm.
still there,
yeah,
in Woodstock. Some people have moved out.
She told me that,
Some people have left. So it's not strong. I don't think they're really feeling up to the morale is down. It's really difficult, and yeah, so that's why I was saying I wasn't sure if we'd be able to, like, if you'd have an opportunity to see her.
Yeah,
because she's just, her spirits aren't really high.
Yeah,
so in the middle of all of this, linked to Tafelberg, we occupied these two buildings. Like, it's nerve-wracking.
I said to Sean, we need to occupy somewhere. I want to be out there occupied. Like, I kept saying, please let them still be occupied when I get there.
They're still occupied. It went, like, it was a very tactical thing. It was, like, meant to be a symbolic occupation initially, but now we're having a conversation about whether it should be a permanent occupation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always the fear that law enforcement will come in, right?
Yes, and I, yes, because I had some questions about that.
Yeah, okay, ask away.
So, hold on. Yeah, so occupant, it was like, so who decides
about
occupant? So who made the decision, you know what, we're going to occupy those buildings?
Okay, so initially, the question of the occupation has been around since like last year.
Okay.
And then, in March, it came back. And initially we thought about doing it before the province responded about Tafelberg, but then we thought that might just piss the premier off.
So completely, not. So we'll give her a chance.
And we're like, whatever outcome, if it's not,
if it
wasn't like, yes, we're gonna scrap this and we're gonna build social housing there, we would occupy it. No matter what justification she gave, we're gonna occupy. It just so happened that the two sites we'd earmarked to occupy were also the sites that she said would also be given for affordable housing in place of Tafelberg, which kind of put us in a very difficult position. Because people are like, but she's given them to you, why are you occupying? But it was what it was, and we did it anyway.
Okay.
So it was like an internal, like it was a suggestion made here, it was a proposal made here that we took to the Seapoint chapter, and we raised it with them, and they're like, we're all about it, we'll get in there. And it took a while to organize. So the AK, the Helen Bowden site, which is now called the Ahmed Kantrada House.
Yes.
It was, Sarita was in there, it was Faith, it was Sheila, I don't know if you've met her.
No.
She's from the Seapoint chapter.
Okay.
And then there were two other people, so it was like five occupiers. Equally, it was Jared at the Woodstock Hospital site. And Dombe was in there. Who else was in there? Tim was in the other one. And then two other people from like equal education or whatever, and they occupied for about. So we had anticipated.
So the NU, like reclaim the city.
NU reclaim the city, but it was like 6-7 people in each house.
In each house, okay.
So like Emile and I and Daniel, obviously the law center because I can't. Were outside.
Okay.
Yes. But we were supporting in whatever they need, so we take them food. So we occupied on a Saturday.
Saturday
evening, and the idea was that we would make it public on the Monday.
Okay.
That we thought that we'd get an immediate response from law enforcement to evict, but the idea was to make a point, right? Just to make a point. Like a political message of sorts. And just to freak them out, you know. No response on Monday. No response on Tuesday.
From law enforcement.
No, from like the province. From nowhere, as in from like the province, and I mean, law enforcement would have had to get a directive from the province to come and get us out.
Okay.
So province clearly didn't say anything.
Okay.
So nothing. And Tuesday comes, Wednesday comes. So now we're like, fuck. What do we do? So then, some of this is like off the record because it's all supposed to look very young.
Yes, I
know.
You know, 100%.
Yeah. So then on the Thursday, we're like, okay, perhaps we need to do like a mass, like a storming of sorts.
Okay.
At one of the houses, like increase the number because it was like six people in each house. Doesn't look quite threatening.
Yes.
But like if you bring in like a
20-30,
knowing how sensitive this province is about like occupations and just black people and poor people and like the city and all of that, we thought we'd get a response. Anyway, so Thursday evening we had like a mass meeting of sorts outside the Helen Bowden and they were like, yeah, there were quite, there were a lot of people. So we called in comrades from this place called Marikana, from everywhere, from Woodstock, like all these organizations that support us were called. So it was like maybe 70-80 people in this small little courtyard. And then so you'll see it when Maxine takes you. There's like a pavement.
Okay.
And then there's a fence, and then there's a courtyard over the fence where the building is. So we're meeting out on the pavement, the media's there, everybody's there. Talking, and the side somebody brings a crowbar, snaps the lock, and then we storm in, and then we're in the courtyard, and then the police come, right, as we'd expected, and we thought that they'd, you know, pull us out.
Yep.
We're like, okay, guys, obviously we have a conversation about what happens with law enforcement.
Yes.
If you don't want to get arrested, when they tell you to leave, then
leave. Okay.
Right?
Right.
But if you're willing to go down for the struggle and you're willing to do some jail time, then just line up. Don't be violent. Like,
yep.
It's completely
okay.
Non-violent.
Yep.
Non-violent. Just make yourself limp or whatever, you know. The police come in, they talk to Zaki, and basically they're like, in a nutshell, if you need us, we'll be waiting over there. But like, we're not gonna do anything.
So,
oh, no,
just
so
to make
we're like, oh, okay, alright, fine. So it's like, okay, what do we do from here? So it's like, okay, so all these people are here. And then we're like, okay, let's go take a tour of this house. We go in, and then that's how we got more occupiers. And we're like, this is nice. You know, I think there was a sense, everybody had seen it externally on social media and the paper, but they didn't quite anticipate. It's quite jarring to talk about a housing shortage and that there's no housing in the city, to come onto a site that's been empty for years.
Yeah.
And you see it in such a decent condition.
Yeah.
It's huge. It can accommodate so many people. So, like, I think it just kind of reinvigorated
people. Yeah.
Again, so that's where other people are like, you know what, for this, we'll be willing to occupy as
yeah.
well for however long is necessary. And yeah, this was like in end of
March.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still there.
And that's how we've kind of been sustaining.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's not easy,
yeah.
But yeah.
No, that was my question. And then the other question was, how do you protect, you know, the staff and the residents in terms of risks? But you just answered that.
Yeah.
Said,
so like.
Yep.
So we point out the risks.
Yeah.
Every time.
Everybody,
every time
yes.
there's a new, like new people coming in, we tell
yeah.
them like this is what happened.
Happens, yeah.
You're like, if the police raid at 2 o'clock in the morning, for example, if
mm-hmm.
staff is not there. You will go to jail.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're lucky, they'll tell you to just vacate, and you
yep.
may decide to vacate, but they may take you to jail. But then we have lawyers on hand
to
get
to
you
do
out.
That, yes.
If you have a police record already, we advise that you don't stay.
Fair
because
enough,
then
yeah.
bail is not going to be easy. At least everybody, if this is new, never,
yes.
then we could get, we could pay bail
yeah.
for you, and we could have the
okay.
lawyers on hand. So we kind of
do
talk do to the
that?
Risks.
Okay.
And then initially we were kind of supporting financially as well in terms of food and
mm-hmm.
mattresses and all of that, but that's unsustainable.
I know,
so we
yeah.
put out a call, and people are incredibly supportive.
What
people if? Make meals for like
really?
People shop like loop toilet paper,
mm-hmm.
Like anything that you need in the house. People volunteer their time when somebody's ill in the house. Like, we've got this group going on. If you want to join, if you want to be on the supporting committee outside of the occupations, then you join the WhatsApp group, you ask to join.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, one of the occupiers was ill on a Sunday or something. Somebody, so we said it on the WhatsApp. Somebody's like, okay, I'm in Woodstock. I can go pick her up and I'll take her to the hospital. Somebody knew a doctor. So
right.
I know my doctor friend can see her now.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. But as romantic and lovely as that sounds, it's hella hard.
I can imagine,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So the idea is to move toward permanent for however long permanent is.
It's
right?
Okay.
And
yeah.
How long the state will allow them to be permanent. But that's still something, a point of discussion right now, if
mm-hmm.
people are willing to do that,
yeah, yeah.
to stay in the houses for that long.
Okay.
And, yeah. And we're hoping to use these occupations as a sort of mobilizing tool, you know? We don't... The movement is still new and growing.
Yes.
And I think these have provided an opportunity to grow it even more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's not just talk. You know, let's be radical. Let's do something different. Let's not just talk about policy, which is important.
Yes.
But actually shake things
yeah.
up a little
yep.
bit. You know, go outside the status quo, outside the norm of what resistance is in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It needs to happen though, because
yeah.
we're at a point back home where, and Sean rightly so, again off the record, Sean
yeah.
is he's very much like me, you know.
Yeah.
It's easier to ask for forgiveness and permission.
Yes.
You know, in his area there's kids needing, you know, to cross a road to school. It's a busy main road.
Yeah.
and the government and the province aren't putting in the, you know, like traffic lights, and he's like,
yeah,
so why can't we go out?
Yeah.
Why can't we paint the zebra crossing?
Yeah.
And why can't we do? And he's right, you know.
Yeah.
Why do we always have to keep asking?
Exactly.
And they keep saying no. Let's do something.
Yeah.
Let's change it ourselves. So
exactly. Exactly.
That's where we are back home. You know, we have again similarities in terms of.
There's only so much you
can do.
Yeah.
There's only so many times you can ask.
Yeah.
Before you need to take radical action.
Yeah.
Like before you need to take, and it doesn't, as you say, it's non-violent.
Yeah.
But it's like, look at us, we're not going away.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think we've definitely made them uncomfortable.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely made them uncomfortable. But also, we've done it in a time where the South Africa is like on the, it's not imploding, but like there's just so much going on
politically. I know, and it's so, because in Johannesburg, over, we were talking about this over coffee, about like the discontent.
Okay.